You've been listening to Predictably Drunk Smart People talking about stupid things for a long time now. You have, and I appreciate that. And a lot of you, okay, none of you, have been asking me how you can support me and support the show. Well, I have a way. If you go to predictablydrunk.com and click on the amazon.com link, it'll take you to amazon.com where you can do all of your shopping online like you would normally do. But because you took the portal through predictablydrunk.com to get there, Amazon is kind enough to throw us back a couple of dollars to help the show out. No hidden charges, no extra fees, just your normal shopping at Amazon.com. Click the Amazon link on the menu at predictablydrunk.com and help a brother out.
You're listening to Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things with your host, Sam Marcoux and Matt Somerville.
Predictably drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. Once again, back with you, season 3, episode 1. And I know what you're thinking, how can a podcast have seasons? Well, it does, because I run this and I can do whatever I want. So this is now season based. Season 3, episode 1. How is everybody doing? Thank you to Ross Baker. Good to hear your voice again. And Matt Somerville is not with us on this first episode. He is recovering from surgery, oral surgery, in fact, which means it's going to be very difficult for him to actually speak on a show that only is audio. So he'll be back with us on the very next episode. But coming up on this episode, I'm very excited. We have a returning guest on our show. Steph Garcia is going to be joining us here in a little bit. Steph Garcia was the very first female guest we had on Predictably Drunk back in season 1. She's back. She's now not only a comedian, but also a reality TV star. That's right. She got herself a reality TV show out of New York on the Food Network, America's Worst Bakers or something along those lines. I can't get that plug right, but it is in the notes of this show. So feel free to check that out. It's going to happen on October 2nd on the Food Network, 10 p.m. Pacific time. It's going to be fantastic. And she's just awesome. We had a great interview. We'll get to that here in a little bit. Coming up on Stupid Drunken News, we've got a lady who robbed an Arby's and then took a taxi cab to escape the scene of the crime. I'll explain a little bit more about that later, but it is the very epitome of stupid drunken news. And it happened in Florida, which is shocking. I feel like all the stupid drunken news in the United States happens to come out of Florida, specifically northern Florida. We'll get to that here in a little bit. But first here, what's on tap? My favorite part of the show is when I get to review the beer. Not only because I get to review it, because I get to drink it. In this case, I get to drink a local amber ale. It's actually an Imperial Amber Ale from Strike Brewing right here in San Jose, California. I've been wanting to review something from these guys for a while. I actually got turned on to these guys when I moved to the South Bay and actually started picking up their beer in local markets and things of that nature. Real cool company here. I actually emailed their brewmaster a couple of times just telling them how much I love their product. They have an IPA out there, which is really good. And they responded. They responded in tow and said, hey, you know what? Thanks for the kind words. We appreciate it. Keep drinking beer. Keep getting drunk on our dime and all that fun stuff. So this particular bottle of Amber Ale, Imperial Amber Ale from Strike, is kind of a limited edition. It's got the Santa Cruz Screaming Hand on it. Now, you guys probably don't know what I mean when I say that, but if you were to look up or Google image Screaming Hand, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It's a big blue severed hand with a mouth on it, and it's screaming, and it's one of those iconic images that's associated with Santa Cruz and skateboard culture and all that fun stuff. Anyway, the artist that created this image just celebrated, I believe, his 30th anniversary of making it. So at the Santa Cruz Museum of Modern Art, they had a huge display, huge party to celebrate the man from Santa Cruz who did probably the only thing in his life is this, which is one thing better than I can say. But he was there. The man who actually made the whole thing was there. He was drinking this Imperial Amber Ale with his logo on it. I decided to take a swig. I loved it. Ended up getting 2 bottles of it. And I'm not a big Amber Ale kind of guy. Tends to give me heartburn, but this one was fantastic, which is saying something because, again, I'm not a big fan of Amber Ales. But I give this one whatever you want to give it. 2 thumbs up, 5 stars, whatever the case may be. Well done, Strike Brewing out of San Jose. You got a fan in me. Fantastic beer. Loved it. And I would drink it again if I can find it again. Absolutely. So there you go. Strike Brewing out of San Jose. Get your hands on it, ladies and gentlemen, because it's a local beer and it is fantastic. So if you're here local in Northern California, find yourself something by Strike Brewing and enjoy yourself, and you can thank me later. All right, coming up, Steph Garcia is going to join us here in a minute. We're going to talk a little bit about her reality show on the Food Network. Again, she was back in New York filming this thing. She was hilarious to tell us about how she was drinking on set, and she's a little bit afraid of how they're going to portray her on the air come October 2nd when the show debuts on the Food Network. Network. She talks a little bit about Facebook and why she is deciding to actually give it up, which as a stand-up comedian, I question a little bit, because it's one of those things where Facebook is by far the easiest way to mass communicate with people. And when you're a stand-up comedian, a lot of the promotional work that you end up having to do is on your own. With that being said, here is my conversation with Steph Garcia, and we'll see you guys on the flip side. Joining me right now is comedian, stand-up comedian, reality TV star, I guess we can say that now, good friend of the show, very first female guest on this show's history, and she's back here at the start of season three here on Predictably Drunk, the very funny Steph Garcia. How are you doing, Steph?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing much better now that we figured out how to actually talk to each other on the internet. Like, we finally, you and I finally joined 2002.
We should have asked our toddlers to help us.
Between your kids and my kids, if they were here, they would actually be our like executive producers and actually figure out how to put all this stuff together. But technology is a beautiful thing, if not frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason I have Steph on here, besides the fact that she's hilarious, is that she's got a show coming up on the Food Network, correct?
Right. The Food Network, it's Worst Bakers in America, season one. And it debuts on Sunday, October 2nd at 10 p.m. California time on the Food Network.
So the world's worst bakers.
Yeah.
So how did you qualify for this? I mean, I guess an idea of how you qualified for it, but did you just have to bake a bunch of food and like mail it to them or take photos, or how did this whole process come about?
Yeah, I shipped a bunch of shit over to New York. No, actually, okay. So I do a Pinterest segment on Good Day Sacramento around the holidays, any kind of holiday. And what I do is I choose a couple of Pinterest things that look super easy to bake. And then I follow the instructions, and then we compare their picture to my picture. And I usually fuck it up, and not on purpose. I don't believe that anyone on Pinterest is honest. And I think that a lot of them have this thing called Photoshop.
Yes.
That makes things look really good. And so it's kind of me being irritated that A, I don't have a patience to bake, and B, I just want people to know that Pinterest is full of shit. And so Cheryl, the soccer mom Anderson, sent those clips to a casting company who was casting for Worst Bakers in America. And they literally picked me up from her, whatever she sent them.
Is it that the recipes were written down bad, or is it that you can't follow directions, or a combination? Were you drunk when you were putting them together? Like, what? Why were they not turning out how the recipe said? Are they just bad recipes?
If I was drunk, maybe I would have taken the time and they would have turned out actually good. Looking back, the reason why those things did not work is because I go too fast in the kitchen. I want everything very fast, everything done fast. I'm kind of a really fast person. And so I don't know how to bake. And I didn't know that there was actually a science to baking. I just figured, why do I have to put the eggs and the sugar in and cream them together before I add the flour? It's all going in the same fucking bowl. And the thing is that there is an actual science to it. So I'll say all of the above, except for I wasn't drunk. I did drink on the set at the Food Network, and I am nervous that they're going to portray me as an alcoholic from California. And I'm more worried that that's probably true. So
that's probably why we get along so well here, and why you are back here on Predictably Drunk. But that was actually one of my next questions, so that's a good lead in. So you fly to New York, you get called out, you're cast on this show with you and how many other bad bakers in America?
There's 12 of us.
There's 12 horrific people in the kitchen that go there all on their own merits for whatever reason across the country. What, six guys, six women, or how's this split up?
I think it was six and six.
Okay.
I can't really remember. I should know that. Yeah, I think it was six and six. I don't think I paid attention too much. I figured I'd go home in the first episode and it'd be hilarious. And I didn't.
Oh, you did? So what does that mean? Like, if you don't get eliminated right away, are you better than the worst? Like, I guess the better you do, the worse off you are on the show. Is that kind of how it's going to work out?
No, it actually works out. So Duff Goldman and Lorraine Pascal, they're like super bakers. She's from London, and he's here from New York or Boston or something like that. And they teach us how to bake something, and then they make us replicate it and put our own twist on some things. And the better you did, the further you went the show. So if people still fuck up, and then they got sent home.
Okay.
And What happened was I got really competitive when I got there, and there was nothing for me to focus on except the instructions. And so I did what they told me to do, and I ended up, I can't say how far I went or if I won, but I'm really excited to see the show.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, so you've made the leap here from being a stand-up comedian who's got some local gigs going on in terms of not only stand-up as well as being on TV, doing local spots, like you said, but now you're on a national show on the Food Network, a reality show. So you have gone from being a stand-up comedian where you can be the most real you can possibly be to a genre of television called reality TV, which I think for the most part people assume is the most fake thing on television. So
yeah.
How did you wrestle with that? Like you said, I mean, it sounds like you were drinking on set, which is why you're my hero. But how contrived is it? Because you're doing more of a game show type of reality show, which I think has a little bit of merit to it versus doing, you know, sitting in a house with a camera on you type of thing. But are you sequestered with these other people in the house, or do you guys have hotel rooms and then just meet for X amount of time to film? Or how did this whole process come about?
So a lot of these TV shows, there were two other contestants that were on the Worst Cooks of America in prior seasons. And their story was that everybody stayed in a house and they had cameras on at the house and they took them out in places and did things with them when there was no camera time to be done. And this experience was different. We're the first season, and they had just, like, literally I got off the plane, and as soon as I walked into the apartment in this little community in New York, they hadn't even set up all of our beds 100% yet. So six of us stayed in one apartment and six of us stayed immediately next door in the other apartment. And that was interesting. There were no cameras in the apartments, but, you know, you also don't get, and you sign your life away, by the way. It's a very lengthy contract. So there's certain things I can't really discuss, but they do take your phone away, and like, you are sequestered, and you are, they don't want you to cheat and look up recipes. So I understood that. And then you're sitting in an apartment with a bunch of people, and it's been a long time since I've had roommates that aren't my kids and husband, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like when I go on the road for comedy and I have to share a comedy condo with like five other comics that are in town that weekend, and you just kind of have to go, okay, who's getting the floor? Who's getting you said you guys had beds at least, but some people get beds, some people get couches, some get the floor, and it's okay for like a day or two, but after a while you're kind of looking like, my God, I don't even like these people, and I have to sit in this room all weekend with them.
Yep. I was lucky that the people that were in my apartment, I got along with most of them pretty well. The people in the apartment next door to me, I didn't get along with a few of them. And, you know, it was eye-opening. You get a lot of strong personalities for this show, and then you put us in a situation where we're, you know, distanced from our family and distanced. We're not on the internet at all. And, you know, I ended up staying there almost a month.
Wow.
And I was homesick, and I got sick, and I fell, and I got totally jacked up on my arm.
Did they catch it on camera when you fell?
No, but you'll see in the interview room, you know, when they do these shows and then they pan to you talking about what was going on at that moment.
Sure.
Well, those, you'll see like me talking one day, and then like literally the next episode, there'll be a huge black bruise on my arm. And, but everybody was cool. It was really interesting. I didn't anticipate being away from my family that long. That was really, really difficult. You know, my kid is four, and I got a 16-year-old, and my husband had to take care of everything, and we didn't really know how long I'd be gone. I mean, it's literally based, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it without giving anything away.
Sure.
But like,
no, we don't want to get you in trouble here before it debuts here on Sunday, October 2nd on the Food Network. Steph Garcia, part of World's, what is it, America's? No, I'm going to mess this up. World's Worst Bakers.
No. Worst Bakers in America.
I'm the worst. I'm the worst host in podcasting in America right here on Predictably Drunk. Worst Bakers in America. Did I get it right that time?
Yes.
All right. Finally, thank God, after 17 times. So what was your drink of choice? Like, what were you drinking while on the show? Just anything you get your hands on? Or were you drinking something specific, or how did that whole thing come about? Like, screw it, I'm drinking during this whole process.
Yeah, I was looking for Jameson, but they don't have Jameson. They don't have Jameson in any of the liquor stores that were near us either in New York. So I know. They love, oh gosh, what is it out there? They love Hennessy. Like, they love Hennessy like it's Dr. Pepper or something. It's crazy.
And it sounds like they love Hennessy like it's a Dr. Dre video. I mean, isn't that in every single gangster rap video from 1990?
Dude, this whole experience is so fucking crazy. Yeah, it was nuts. I don't even know where to start. We have a full stocked kitchen and pantry. And so if I finished early, I went over and I looked at the bottles and like, I'm a vodka drinker. Like I like vodka cranberries and occasionally a beer. But the bottles, all the labels have tape over them so that, you know, if we use them on the show, you can't see what they are. Sure. So I don't know what I drink. I think it ended up being scotch and bourbon. Oh, and I am not a scotch and bourbon person, but I fucking played the part because as soon as it went down, I'm all, oh my God.
It's jarring, man. It's one of the weirdest things in life when you think you're going to eat or drink something and it turns out to be something else. Like I ordered drinks recently for a friend and he thought it was tequila and it turned out that I ordered him scotch. And as soon as it hit his mouth, like he almost spit it out like he was a dragon of some sort, and just because he had no idea he was about to drink scotch. So if you don't know what you're drinking and it hits your mouth, it's hard to just keep a straight face and be like, yep, I meant to do that.
Yeah, I still don't know what I drank. It looked like, from my old waitressing days, it looked like a bottle of Grand Marnier.
Okay.
Which is sweet.
Yeah.
It was not.
They fucked with you. They switched all the alcohols in the bottles.
Maybe. I still don't know what the fuck that was. And then I would challenge people to drink, and I'd tell them that they suck because they can't drink. And I don't know. I mean, we had a good time on the set. It was fun. I'm glad they allowed me to drink because I needed to calm my nerves down. That adrenaline rush, like you were talking about how reality TV, it's probably like all fake. It's not, which I thought it would be. I thought, they're going to tell us what to do, tell us what to say, tell us when we're going home, tell us. It's not. It's as soon as you walk in, there's this hardcore producer who's just like, this, hello, recruits, this is what you're going to do. You're going to stand here, here, and here, and then you're going to learn this, and then you're going to leave. And we're like, okay, and that's what we did. Then we come back a couple hours later, and it's like, now you're going to learn, now you're going to bake what you just learned. And so you better have taken good notes. And then the times, when they're like, time starts now, that's all real. And I don't know, my competitive side really came out, which surprised me because I'm like, I'm gonna fuck up tomorrow on purpose so I can go home to my kids. I miss my kids so much. And then I'm gonna fucking win. Fuck her.
Yeah, so you're kind of wrestling with these different emotions there. So one of the things I did want to talk to you about, speaking about emotions, is you made a big announcement on Facebook the other day. You're usually pretty good about your social media, but you announced that after this show debuts, which will be on October 2nd, you are shutting down your social media page on, at least on Facebook. And you gave a lot of reasons why.
Yeah. After the season's over.
Okay.
So I'm not going to just ditch after the first episode. I'll be there for the season. So one thing that, I noticed when I was in New York, I think one of the most interesting things is they do take your cell phones away from you when you get there. And I get that. They don't want you to look on recipes and stuff, but they literally really do. So you think, well, we'll get them back at night. You don't. Most days we got them for an hour per night. And so I would not choose that hour to be on Facebook or anything else. I would choose, and we weren't supposed to go on the internet. So I would choose to call my family and my friends and like have these real conversations. And what I noticed is that was lovely. That was so nice to like answer texts and talk to my friends and talk to my family and, you know, not go on Facebook at all. And the thing that sucked is the first week, all of us were really antsy and like, it was like an addiction.
Sure.
I don't consider myself having an addictive personality, but for instance, coffee, everybody knows if you stop coffee, you have a raging headache for like
7 years. Yeah. Around there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, what I noticed is I was like, wow. And then I started, so then I'm just there and I have really nothing to do when we aren't filming, and in between sets, you can't look on your phone and like pass the time. So it was kind of like, I started maybe like charting in my head, just, I would have gone on Facebook this time. I would have gone on Facebook now. Like all the times I reached for my phone to zone out, and it made all of us cast members talk to each other. And I just really had this awakening where I spend too much time on Facebook. I don't do a lot on Twitter. I love Instagram just because it makes me happy. And I only follow people that, you know, are inspiring or whatever. And Facebook, I get emotionally involved. Facebook, I try to solve problems. Facebook, I donate to GoFundMe pages of people that I don't even fucking know who they are.
I didn't know you were giving out money, Steph. Shit, I would have been putting up GoFundMe pages a long time ago.
I'm kidding you. I was talking to Carlos Rodriguez,
yep,
fellow comic, And I go, and I was telling him all of my, you know, all this stuff that's been coming up since the show. And I said, dude, I'm donating to this guy because he's trying to get custody of his kid and he's in Kentucky. And he goes, meanwhile, he's just some guy like in Florida who's just wants a bottle of, you know, and it's just like, you're right. I don't know who these people are. But I mean, I got so emotionally tied up in some of the things that I found on Facebook that I didn't know who these people were. Like at one point I was trying to get the media to cover a story about these girls who were going to be homeless and in the foster care system. And like, I was telling my husband, we need to adopt them because we need to save them. And
see, no, it's not healthy, but it also shows that you're human. I mean, my biggest concern, I do comedy just like you do. And yeah. Are you concerned at all about getting the word out for your shows? Like, you have a big show coming up in late October, do you not?
Yeah, October 15th at the Roseville Theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, October 15th at the Roseville Theater. That's what, Saturday night, if I'm not mistaken? So that's a big weekend right. show. That's a huge money-making show, usually, is to get people out to, especially at a theater, on the weekends. And social media, especially Facebook, which is still by far the largest gathering of people on the internet.
Yeah.
It stands to reason that, you know, I use it to promote my shows and promote this show that we're talking to right now on Predictably Drunk, as well as my stand up and everything else. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned about not being able to promote that way? Or do you just say, hey, you know what? I don't care. It's not worth it. I'll find other ways to promote it, either old school with pounding the pavement, hitting the streets, doing radio interviews, that type of stuff. Or are you just not worried about it at all?
I'm not worried about it at all. I know that that's going to be a consequence. And I do have a Facebook page that's my comedy site only. And it has a, you know, 600-700 followers or something. And anytime I tweet, it automatically updates that one. So if people are really interested in my comedy, they'll be able to find me. I will tweet out my shows. It will go on that Facebook page that I never log on to. I'm deleting my personal Facebook page because it's just what I need to do for my mental stability. And honestly, I'm opening for Taylor Tomlinson at that show. So I'm pretty sure people are going to come see her and then they'll just happen to see me. And I'm not a big household name. And after this experience in New York, I'm not sure that's the direction I want to go anymore.
Really?
So yeah, I really want to do my podcast. I talked about a podcast. I've talked about this podcast for a couple years and I finally partnered with someone who's building the site and a lot of time was taken from me setting it all up because of this show and some other stuff. And I really want to start my podcast. So I'll have a website, you know, and I'm not comparing myself to anyone, but there's comedians out there who have a huge following and they only have a website.
Yeah.
Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Only has a website and he sends out emails about his shows and he's very successful. So if I choose to pursue comedy, and I don't know what's going to happen after the show, if something happens where it gets bigger and bigger, well, then people will know how to find me elsewhere. But Facebook is depressed. It causes me to feel depressed. It causes me to get anxious. It causes me to feel things for a long time. And I'm a very empathetic person and I'm sensitive and I can't let go of things. And, Facebook doesn't help that. It hurts it, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I get what you're saying. And, you know, I've taken breaks in the past, self-imposed breaks from social media just because sometimes it becomes too much. But I'm too much of a media whore. I think I need it. So any of Steph's friends who, once she deletes her Facebook, yeah. Feel free to look me up. I can use some additional friends and you can just like and do little hearts and everything else that you want to do on Facebook. I'm here for you, Steph Garcia's friends.
But, yeah. I don't know. That's another thing too. I'm kind of glad you brought that up because during these shows, these Baker shows, I'm going to try to not read any of the comments from people because I don't know how I'm going to be portrayed. They could do whatever they want. But there's just mean people out there like you. And but there are mean people out there. Someone's going to hate me on the show and just be like, you fucking suck, you fat bitch, blah, blah, blah. I know that's going to happen. And I don't want to deal with that anymore. So what's interesting is I've grown up my entire life wanting to be famous and I just got a tiny tad piece of the pie and I don't think I want to be famous anymore. And it hasn't even aired and I'm pretty sure I don't want to ever do anything like this again.
It's funny you say that too, because there's been times where I have been recognized. I was walking down the street one day in Monterey and this guy was at a show previously, and he's like, hey, you're a comedian, and he started talking to me, and I had no idea how to interact with him. Like, I felt so socially awkward, because the only way this guy knows me is on stage, which is, right. you know, a persona. It's an extension of who we are, of course, but I felt like I had to perform all of a sudden. I was like, look, I need to fill out this W-9 before I talk to you. I don't know how to talk to you because you only know me on stage. And then they go, oh, you're funny. And you're like, okay, thanks. And then you just kind of stare at them like, I guess you're nice. I don't know what to say to you. Like, I don't know. I don't want to be your friend. Like, how do I get out of this?
We were out with my family and someone recognized me and started talking and like wanted to take a picture with me and my family because I talk about my kids so much. And I'm like, no, I mean, that was only one time that happened. And that kind of did it. I'm like, you know what? This is probably it for me. This Food Network show is great, and I can end on that. And I'm not thinking about really getting out of comedy, but I don't know if I'm going to pursue it, you know?
Yeah, I know. I hate you saying. I mean, you ever had your jokes repeated back to you, and you have no idea what they're referencing? Like, that's a weird one, too, when people are like, hey, you look like a lesbian. I'm like, dude, that's just fucking rude. What are you talking about? And then you find out, oh, I think they're doing my bit. And you just have no idea because you're not in that mode. You're just kind of like, I'm out trying to buy a sandwich. Like, why are you consulting me? What did I do to you?
Yeah, I just never change my material, so I always know what they're saying. So
that's how it goes. So Steph Garcia, October 2nd, Food Network, America's Worst Bakers.
Worst Bakers in America.
God, I'm terrible. I have dyslexia. Does that count for me speaking that way? Worst Bakers in America on the Food Network, October 2nd. We've got the, Auburn Theater on October 15th?
Roosevelt Theater on October 15th.
So there you go. She will still be involved with social media, ladies and gentlemen. You'll still get your funny from Miss Steph Garcia, just not on Facebook. So jump on Instagram at Big Mouth Podcast. Check her out on the Food Network starting October 2nd. That's this Sunday. And then if you're in the area of Roseville and you'd like to go to the theater and check her out on stage, that's going to be October 15th. You guys can find tickets for that in the link of this show. Steph, thank you very much for coming on the show. I'm looking forward to it. I'm rooting for you to be the least worst baker in America. If that makes any sense. I'll be watching the show. I only have like 5 channels now that I watch, and I'm going to make a 6th one just for you because you're awesome. I'm rooting for you. And I hope they show you drinking on there, or at least portray you as a California drunk. That's what I'm hoping for more than anything else.
Yeah, have me on after those episodes.
All right, Steph, thank you very much. And once again, October 2nd is the Food Network show, and then October 15th at the Roseville Theater. Get your tickets and... go enjoy yourself. Steph Garcia is very funny, very talented young lady. So thanks again for being on the show, Steph.
Thank you.
Big thanks once again to Steph Garcia for coming on the show and promoting her show on the Food Network, debuting on October 2nd. That is a Sunday, this Sunday, in fact. So check it out if you aren't already. Make sure you put that on DVR and find out how far our girl gets, man. We're rooting for her. We want her to be the least worst baker in America or something along those lines. I hate math. It feels like a math equation. Anyway, moving on to stupid and drunken news. As I told you at the top of the show, this is coming out of Gainesville, Florida, which does not surprise me at all. It seems, again, like most of the stupid stories that I come across happens to be out of the panhandle area of Florida, Swamp City, all of that fun stuff. In this case, Gainesville, Florida, the heart of the worst part of Florida. A woman robs an Arby's restaurant and flees in a taxi cab. A Florida woman faces armed robbery charges after police say she robbed an Arby's restaurant in Gainesville and then hailed a cab to get away. A Gainesville police report says 20-year-old Kashante Taylor pointed a gun at a clerk on Sunday morning and demanded money. Authorities say Taylor took more than $200 from 3 registers at the fast food restaurant. The Gainesville Sun, which is their local paper there, reports Taylor hopped in a cab, which police stopped a couple of blocks away. Police say they recovered a gun and $219 cash. She remains in the county jail, and we're not sure if she's hired a lawyer or not. Something tells me if she is robbing an Arby's and doesn't even have a car and has to hail a cab, that she has not hired a lawyer. There's a hankering in my head that says she's probably getting a public defender, ladies and gentlemen. Just a thought, not sure. Okay, I have a couple of questions that I'm not sure if I'm ever going to get answered. Number one, she took a cab. How lucky is she to rob Arby's at gunpoint, run out of the establishment, and happen to see a cab that she can flag down and run away in? Unless she took the cab to get there, which maybe she did and just told her, keep the meter running. I have to go rob this place real quick. I'll be right out. Why would she not take an Uber or a Lyft? I'm not sure, but that's what she did. She took a taxi cab. Furthermore, I wonder how Furthermore, after you get pulled over in a taxi cab, how long does the cabbie have to keep the meter running? Because I'm assuming that after she was arrested, pulled over, arrested, stopped, all that fun stuff, that the actual tab on the taxi cab
had to be more than $219, which she got from the Arby's itself. But that is the show. That is Stupid Drunken News. Thanks again to Steph Garcia during happy hour. And, of course, What's on Tap with my friends over there at Strike Brewing and the Imperial Amber Ale. Until next time, keep drinking.
You've been listening to Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things with your host, Sam Marcoux, and that other guy. What was his name again? Oh, it doesn't matter. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and find the complete catalog on predictablydrunk.com. Until next time, keep drinking. Passenger, that's pale, rusted. I don't think that anyone